Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
I was a news anchor for almost 30 years.
Emmy-winning journalist.
Tamsin Fidel.
So I went from like, hey, we're dating, fun. I'd get off the air news at night. I'd meet him at 11 o'clock. We'd have sex. And then my libido was like gone. It just was gone. Even though we read the words like, you know, lack of libido or lack of sexual desire. Like seeing those words as a symptom list and feeling those words and dealing with those in real life in a relationship is really different. I went back to a doctor and I was like, I don't know what's going on, but like I have no sex drive. The doctor that I went to said, okay, you need to talk to a therapist to see if there's something else going on with you first. And I said, well, why can't it just be like about my physically? And they were like, no, we want you to do that first, which made me feel like a lot of shame with that. The scarier part wasn't not having sex. The scarier part was, why don't I want to?
So $1 million question, why didn't you want to? Thank you for coming.
Oh, I'm excited.
Bearing gifts. I hope you can sign a copy of my book.
I would love.
And I have a question.
Yes.
Do you play chess?
I do.
Yes?
I'm okay.
You answered it so confidently at first. Which one is it?
I'm okay. Well, my father would be mad if I said no because he taught me, so I better say yes.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
But it's been a while.
Let's do it. It's been a long while. I'm dusty.
Okay. You believe it's magic. We're going to head upstairs, but before we sit in, I just want to go over our game plan.
Yep.
What are you feeling like talking about today?
I feel like the conversation has been a lot about intimacy, partners in this conversation with menopause. You want to go into that?
I would love to talk about that. And this is the place to talk about intimacy.
I've got you.
By intimacy, do we mean fucking or cuddling?
We mean both.
Okay.
We mean both. We need both, don't we?
Yes. Okay. Sometimes we mean one, some of the other, and sometimes we mean both. So I love this plan. All right, let's go.
Let's go.
This episode is sponsored by loversbyshan.com, a suite of services designed to help you enjoy and refine the journey of loving and being loved. The starring guest this episode is the incredible Tamsin Fidel, Emmy-winning journalist and the author of the New York Times bestseller, How to Menopause. This podcast studio replicates the oxygen levels on planes in their studio because it improves people's like cognitive function. Like,
is that what they do in Vegas when they pump the oxygen into the rooms? Yeah. We just had a big party there, a menopause party.
Yes.
The world's hottest menopause
do you know
party.
Who, do you know Katie from UTA?
Yeah, of course.
She's my agent as well. Yes.
Yeah,
so I just had lunch with her last week, so she was telling me all about it.
Good.
So she was, and then she suggested you to the podcast, and I was like, Katie,
so nice.
You're a little late. We've already scheduled it. Thanks.
She's awesome. Yeah. I really love her. She came out, she was like, I'm going to come to Vegas. And I go, Katie, you do not have to do that. She came on a Saturday. She came in with her boyfriend.
Yes.
And they had a really good time. They stayed the whole time. And it was fun. We put it together in 6 weeks. I like still don't believe it happened. But
there probably is no greater gift than doing those things. Like, I'll say this to liken it to, because the work that I do, I talk about sex for a living, and so I don't orgasm from penetration alone. And that's always been a thing of like sort of shame or
I know,
feeling like you're not enough. You're not the ideal.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And the fact that I talk about sex and have to research it, and then he's just there.
Yeah.
And so he's seeing the statistics or hearing other people's stories. It's just so helpful.
Because of course
you're like,
it is.
I don't have to have these kinds of conversations for myself, or because it's contrary to what you're all else hearing from everybody else. So I'm sure Katie coming with her boyfriend, him overhearing these conversations, she's like, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's what happens though with the men that are coming, and we're seeing more of them. And I think it's like, I mean, I do liken it to this a lot of times. I feel like I'm telling men why their wives might not want to have sex with them, and then it makes it easier. You know what I mean? Like, I'm breaking open the conversation. So whether it's with the documentary or the book or the party like that, because it was funny, even my whole family was there. And so we had guys in the audience, and I wasn't thinking of that. But as when we left, I had a lot of them like, thank you. That was like eye-opening.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm glad. you're welcome. I've been to the wife, like, you're welcome. But it's a thing. It's real.
Because if we don't know it, why would men?
There's no reason at all. And I also think that, like, especially when it comes to sex, you know, we talked a lot about lube and the fact that it's not just like, you know, I'm 20 and I'm have lube, you know, that like that shouldn't be something that's shameful or embarrassing. And I think that we, even with the word, you know, for, there wasn't even sexual wellness aisle except for condoms, you know? So I'm hoping that things change a little bit faster, and we're seeing some of that now, bit by bit.
It's so fascinating to kind of get, when you get older and you start to see the ways in which young people sabotage themselves.
Yeah.
Because they'll say things like, I don't need lube. Like, what are you talking? That's for grandmas.
Yeah.
And then you're like 32 years old, postpartum. Yeah. And now you're like,
I need that.
How do I incorporate this into the conversation? Because I made my whole identity, you know, this very different thing. And so even when it comes to sex drive, right? The guffawing and the, like, making fun of other women. At the end of the day, we're all temporarily able-bodied.
Yep.
If we're fortunate, we will become disabled to some capacity, and increasingly so as we get older. So you have to just adopting the language that makes it easier, not just for those who are going through it, but for your future self.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. Because it's good. If you're lucky enough, you're going to get to that point in life. You know, really, I think about that a lot. I think about the fact, like, okay, what was the option of not going through menopause? Not being here. That's the other option. I mean, that is the only option. And so so that's where I've been grateful for a lot of those things. And so it's funny when I step back and I look and I go, oh my gosh, you know, I'm hopeful that it teaches a lot of these women, like, right now, like, on this side of it, it's all okay to have this conversation out in the open. And so, you know, I'm seeing it more and more. It's not, and I do hope that it never becomes too, like, we're talking about that again. You know, I don't want people to feel like that. I was on tour and somebody raised her hand and she was like, you know, I play pickleball and my partner said that I'm using perimenopause as an excuse. And I was like, what? Have we already gotten that far in this, you know, with that word, which I had no awareness of, because for me it's education. And she goes, yeah, they said I'm blaming that, my symptoms on that. And I said, well, send them to me. I don't know what else to say at that point, or find new partners. And so, because I don't want it to be, you know, used against women in a way that's not kind, because then we are silenced again.
That's also kind of the, like, fear sometimes with educating men about stuff, is because that's vulnerability, period.
Sure.
When you share a tender part of yourself,
sure,
you're exposing a weakness. My friend described it as, if you have a castle, when you're vulnerable, you're saying, oh, if you attack here, no, you'll be able to invade very easily. And I was talking about, you know, now with the even menstruation, there's an awareness now of, like, the follicular phase and ovulation, and then the luteal phase. Mm-hmm. And the luteal phase is kind of having a moment.
Yeah, it is too.
It's kind of having a little moment right now. And you're happy to share that with your partner, but you also don't want them to attribute the fact that you were upset that they said that they would do something and they didn't to your luteal phase.
Yes.
When it's really your lazy phase.
Yes, we don't need those used against us when we get smarter.
Right. Yeah. So there's a kind of a fine line of, like, understanding and championing, and then weaponizing.
Yeah, and not using it against. I mean, I do think that, and I do, and I find myself saying that often when I talk about this conversation in the workplace too, is that we don't use that against women, because now everyone's on to what we're going through. You know what I mean? What all of our transitions.
Mm-hmm.
I was a news anchor for almost 30 years. And when I realized I was in menopause, it was because I had a note from my doctor, who I thought knew everything. It said, in menopause, any questions? And that was it. And that set me on this road of, like, what? Yeah, four words. That was it. Like, in menopause, ... any questions? That was kind of like in my note, my patient portal. Yeah, it was typed in my patient portal. And I went, wait, what? I'm too young for that.
Yeah.
I was 49 at the time. Not too young at all. And it set me on this road of discovery of, like, what to do for myself. That's all. I wasn't going to talk to anybody about it. I was in a career that embraced youth, and so that was not a conversation. Hey, guys, just want you to know I'm in menopause now. And during that time, I had started dating my now husband. And so we had been going out for a while, and we were, you know, we were serious at that point.
So you got divorced pre...
I got divorced.
In Perry?
Yeah. I got divorced in Perry, it turns out. But I didn't know, because I didn't know that it was Perry. But I got divorced during perimenopause. I was, like, 41 years old. And so that's right around the time your hormones start going, you know, the shift. And when I think back on it, I was like, wow, I really did have, like, ups, downs of moods, irregular periods, crappy sleep. Like, I was like, check, check, check. And when I was 49, we got engaged, and they got married at 50. So I went from like, hey, we're dating and fun. I'd get off the air in the news at night. I'd meet him at 11 o'clock. We'd have, drinks. We'd have sex. It was great. Travel. And then, my libido was like gone. It just was gone. And I don't know exactly. It wasn't like one day it happened, but we got married. We went on a honeymoon and I was like, oh my God, like I'm on this gorgeous place in Hawaii. Like I should be, this is like amazing, beautiful wedding. And I had no libido. So I really went through a bit of a struggle with that because I had no idea. I just didn't understand how deeply, even though we read the words like, lack of libido or lack of sexual desire, like seeing those words as a symptom list and feeling those words and dealing with those in real life in a relationship is really different.
Your first time experiencing it?
Yeah, absolutely. I always thought, I'm Italian, I'm Lebanese, I got a spicy temper. I like to have fun. And yeah, that was it. That was like, it was my first time experiencing that ever.
I almost rolled my eyes at myself after I said like the beautiful journey, because is that the rebrand that's necessary?
Of menopause?
I'm going to just liken this to low sex drive in a second, because I do think that low sex drive is a gift. And I do think that that experience, and it is maybe similar in a way because it's not a destination, it's a valley. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of like the beautiful journey through menopause. Is that accurate?
I think it is a journey through there. And I think that you come out on the other side and realize it's a beautiful journey. I don't know if going through it, you realize. Like, I don't think I realized it going through. But on the other side of it, I came to appreciate so many things. My lack of filter, one. My comfortability with myself, two, which was amazing. Because that allowed me to have deeper, closer, real relationships versus it's like, hi, how are you? Good, I'm good, how are you? It doesn't look like that anymore. But do you know that? Where you're like, now you hear it and you go, oh. So I do feel that like realness. I can feel people a little bit differently. And I think that comes with going through some of this disruption in life and this transition. And then I also think that, my relationship actually grew stronger out of that lack of sex drive and then having to be honest about it and then work through it and have that conversation, which is really uncomfortable, because what happens with that is oftentimes, well, for me, I felt this like, oh my God, am I not that like sexy woman anymore that he thought he knew? Like, did I lose that part of me? And then I realized I didn't. It just is a different, it's just a different drive and a different part of me. And then I learned my body better, and then I actually learned how to have sex better. But that took time. Like, I wouldn't have said to you 3 years ago, like, it's great, Jan, I love it. This is great. I would have been like, what? Yeah. I wouldn't have. But now I look at it, and I'm like, wow, there's a reason for every one of these seasons, And not to rhyme that, but like, there is like a real purpose behind each one of these seasons we go through, but it's hard to see it when you're in it.
I wonder if that's, sometimes I have to like think about what I'm saying and how applicable it is, because I do want dry spells.
Yeah.
To feel like a positive thing.
Yeah.
And the strength of just living enough life is that you just see the pendulum swings.
Yes.
And
you do.
Majority of the time where you have all the panic on one end, it's just you get the hindsight bias of like, oh, it all worked out. Mm-hmm. And when you do that enough times, then you can give yourself the gift of, as Cree Summer put, not going through the ritual of panic.
Right.
And also acknowledging that there is a lot of strength that can happen during these periods where you have to rediscover yourself. Like, you have no choice. But to redefine yourself, because everything is changing so fast. So I guess I'm just kind of curious if that is it possible to enjoy menopause? This episode is sponsored by me, because why not? Did you know that Lovers is more than a podcast? It's an entire suite of tools designed to help you reach your intimate potential. Like, there's Shayi. You can ask my AI anything, or as I call her, Shayi. Sign up for my weekly newsletter or check out my free resource library of quizzes and worksheets at loversbyshan.com. Want more? Join the Lovers community for $20 a month. This is a space to connect with others who share our passion, book one-on-one time with me, join weekly classes, and even be a part of the podcast. Okay, that's a whole lot of information, but here's the bottom line. If you are ready to enjoy the journey of creating a euphoric, intimate life as much as you're going to enjoy the destination, then head over to loversbyshan.com. I'll see you there. Is it possible to enjoy menopause?
I have. I mean, I changed my life. You know, I really did. And I had no intention of doing that either, which is the interesting part. I had no intention of leaving a job. I really didn't know I was going to get married ever again. Like, I had a disastrous first marriage. So that was not on my to-do list. And I don't know that I was looking for new friends or community. I thought I'd already had that part settled in my life. So I do. I think there's some real gifts in it. But I do think that that time for pause is really scary to people. I do think that. And I do think that, and here's why. I think that there's a lot of ageism wrapped up in the idea of menopause. So then people think like, oh God, this is the end. Like, this is what people were warning me about. It's the end. And I don't think that's what it is. I think it's what actually brings you back over to here with that pendulum.
Do you remind yourself of a version of yourself?
Oh yeah, I know.
Like a childlike version or?
Now?
Yeah.
I think the unfiltered part, yeah, every once in a while I'm like, I would have never said that at 32. I would have been like, I want to do everything right because I want to get it all right because I know what I want next, you know?
So take me back to your honeymoon. You marry your Prince Charming. If you like that term, if you don't, then...
He'll like it.
You marry your Jason Momoa, whatever.
That works too.
Like all of them. You're madly in love. You have this great connection. Yeah. And you don't feel a drive to have sex.
Yeah.
Walk me through what happens next.
Well, I think what happened to me was because I had gone through this divorce and this messy relationship is panic because I'm like, oh no, oh no. Like what is this? And I think the hardest part of it was the fact that I really, Iro was this guy that I didn't expect, right? So our relationship was fun and respectful, and he just was like all these things that I'd always known that I would want in somebody. And you know, I lost my mom at an early age. So I was like, my mom would have loved this guy. I would never thought that about my other, you know, my ex-husband. And so, so I think that what was interesting for me.
Really?
I asked my dad going down the aisle, do you think I'm doing the right thing? I asked my father that at my first wedding, and he reminded me of that when he told him I was getting divorced. Mm. But with Ira, I was like, oh my gosh, you love him. He's like just so amazing. And so it was this great relationship and not one I expected and probably not somebody I would have dated 10 years ago. I was looking for the bad boy. But so to go on a honeymoon and like everything be seemingly perfect, whatever perfect is, you know, like Hawaii, family loves him, friends love him, great, you know, fun. We had a fun wedding. Not like a beautiful wedding, a fun wedding. We had fun. It was a party in New York City on the rooftop. It was fun. And that's what I think about our life. So there was no reason that I shouldn't be like, oh, we're in paradise. And I was like, nothing. And I think that that scared me. It put me back on my heels. And I thought, oh my God, what's wrong? What's the matter? I did not realize what a big deal, how much menopause or this transition, this time would affect things. And it did. However, what I did learn from it is be able to have that conversation with him. And that was pretty amazing. But I just knew that my body didn't feel good. You know, like low libido, what happens with menopause is, you know, it can be painful sex and low libido and you just don't feel, you know, like thinking about it all the time. And when I was younger, I was thinking about it all the time. Like that was what I did. And so it just made me feel really disappointed in myself, honestly. And he was so amazing. He would never say a thing, but I know he's like, what's going on? Like what happened? I had this like amazing like firecracker and then we get married, you know, and we're like, meh. So,
which is kind of like how it is in the sitcoms.
It was exactly what it was. Like what everything you would make fun of, right? And the sitcoms, and it'd be like, oh, look at that. Look at how marriage really is. And then I was like, I'm living it. So, you know, so I went back to a doctor, and I actually did my research. Then went back to a doctor, and I was like, I don't know what's going on, but like I have no sex drive. Here's the crappy part. The doctor that I went to said, okay, you needed to talk to a therapist to see if there's something else going on with you first. And the sex therapist will determine if there's any other problems that you're having. And I said, well, why can't it just be like about my physically? And they were like, no, we want you to do that first, which made me feel like a lot of shame with that. And so, of course, I didn't do that. I changed doctors and they were like, no, you probably need some testosterone. You have no testosterone in your body. And they did a test. I had nothing in my body. And we changed out my hormones a little bit. And then, you know, a lot changed. But what did happen during that time is we got a lot closer. Because we talked about all sorts of stuff. You know, I took him to his first sex shop. I went to, you know, we talked about lube. We talked about things that, like, I wouldn't bring up with other guys because I wouldn't want them to feel like they weren't enough.
I wanted to ask about the specific script that you used to talk about your low libido with your partner, especially because it sounded like it was
drastic. It was pretty drastic. And it's funny because I remember like the next day after our honeymoon and next day after our wedding night, and it was our first night in Hawaii, and I was out like the next morning on like a lounge chair outside, and I was like taking selfies, and he came out, and I was like, I can't believe like I'm sitting on her taking selfies. Like, I just feel so, what is wrong with me? And so then, you know, we sat down, we had breakfast, and we came back and we were walking, had drinks. And I said, I just have to tell you, like, I just don't feel, it's not about you. I just feel nothing. Like, I just don't feel anything. And it was an awful conversation because despite the fact we dated a long time, we hadn't had that. When you have to have that intimate conversation, that's like you're just meeting each other all over again, you know? And we did. And we talked about it, and he was understanding about it, but I didn't understand it. So it's one thing, I mean, what's he going to say? Like, no, I demand it. You know, he's not going to do that. It must be hurt. Well, I think he felt like it was the relationship, something with the relationship. And so I was like, that is not what it is.
That actually makes me think of, too, why it's really powerful to have hard conversations walking versus sitting across from each other.
100%. We did it out by the ocean. It's a big deal. It's a big deal to have it out of the bedroom, too. It's a big deal to not make it a big thing. And, you know, the reason that I put a letter to my partner in the book was because I think that a lot of women, we have a hard time having that conversation with ourselves, right? I had a hard time having that conversation with myself and understanding it. And I think to feel newly married for me anyway, and disinterested in sex, and like, am I ever going to want that again? Yep. Is really, you know, and when you don't go to a doctor and have a doctor, doctors usually say like, how's your sex drive? How often are you having sex? What is it like? That's not what happens. And that's where I hope we can get to with this. Was that the right move?
You did perfect. Yes. You did great, actually, because
you
know what?
How quick are you going to pick that one
off? I was going to kill this guy, but then you moved this in such a way now that...
Ooh,
but I do still...
You're welcome, Tamsin.
And now I can decide, do I want to kill this? And then we
what?
Do, you
is
know?
That? Oh, I didn't even
Let's
see that one.
Let's just go. Blood for blood, baby.
Okay. All right. Let's go. There we go. At least I feel a little bit better. And so it begins.
Now I'm on your side. Right. I am amazed that you had the courage to have it on your honeymoon.
I had to have it. I had to have it there. What am I going to do? We're going to be there for like 5, 6, 7 days. Here's what I think. I do wish that I had understood more about all these things. I wish I understood what low libido really meant. Like, I don't think that I... smooth. I don't think that I really understood that. I think I've seen it, I've heard it, I've heard the commercial and, you know, and all different things. I don't think I really understood that it was confidence that was all part of that. I didn't think I understood that it was all like wrapped up in a lot of different things and how it affects somebody else. And so, so that was a conversation. But I will say this, like I did come out of that with a whole different level of confidence about myself and about who I am and about what I know about my body and what I don't know, and that, you know, what I like and how I can explain my body to somebody and not have them feel insulted, because that's really hard. Like when you're telling somebody that, you know, we've been sleeping together for a while, you know, this is what I want instead. Those are kind of odd conversations, because a lot of times guys or a partner may feel insulted. Like, have you never liked this?
Yeah.
And so I do, it's like this weird, like, oh God, I got to think of 100 things, myself and that and all this stuff to make it be okay. There was a couple of different moments. Like, I had a moment that I wrote about in the book that I didn't even share with him until the book was published, because I was like, he is not going to be okay that I'm sharing any of these stories. And one was a Christmas story where he had like the year before, he goes, I said, what do you want for Christmas? He's like, I just want you in a big bow naked. I'm like, that's fun. So I spent like 2 days finding like the biggest bow I could and tape myself. But it was fun. And the following year, he was like, oh, the same thing again. I'm like, are you out of your mind? Like, I'm not doing anything like that. Like, that's not, and it sucked. It sucked to feel so non-sexy, like for myself, forget about for him for a second, but for myself, it felt very non-sexy. And
non-sexy to say no, or non-sexy to even feel?
Non-sexy to not even feel anything. Yeah, no, it wasn't about him, it was about me. It was about me, like in like confidence-wise, right? It felt like, oh gosh, like I like my sexy self. Is that part gone? You know, is that cute, flirtatious, fun, you know, those kind of things that I, in my head.
You're not currently in a period of time of the dry spell.
I'm not in my dry right now.
Right. So God. Can you walk us through that of coming to a place where both you and your partner understand, accept, and then deprioritize sex maybe?
Yeah.
And how do you then get out of it? And why actually, I hate when I ask multiple questions in one. It's like, bitch, you can just let me just stick with one. That's my one question. Then I'll ask another one.
How would you prioritize it?
Yeah, where do you go? How do you go from we're on our honeymoon, we have this conversation, hey, this can't be the focus because my body's not feeling it. Yeah. I have to go to the doctor. And that tender place there to where you're at today.
Yeah. I mean, it was a road. It's been 2.5 years since we've been married, now almost 3 years. I did go to the doctor. I did and by the way, I want to say this too. That's not a conversation that's really comfortable to have with the doctor either. Like, I felt really embarrassed by it and wound up going to another doctor because I actually really thought something was wrong with me when they sent me to a therapist. But I finally, I got a doctor that I'm with now, and I was like, listen, I have no sex drive. Like, I don't feel sexy even, more or less want to have sex, more or less is it comfortable. And so so I found somebody that I felt really comfortable talking about. She explained, like, here's what's going on in your body. Like, physically, yes, and here's what you don't have, and here's what you do have. And so it took me a while to decide that testosterone was something I wanted to do, because I was like, am I really adding another thing to this routine? Like, can I just get through some of this on my own? Like, how come I'm so weak that I can't just get through it on my own or figure another way around? And I wound up starting testosterone and feeling a little bit of a difference, and then adjusting some different hormones and paying attention to things. And not only, it wasn't just the medicine though, it was really like about understanding each other and talking more about it too. And and saying, like, this is what we're incorporating into, you know, our sex life now, and having more fun with it instead of making it be such a serious, because it became kind of a serious conversation all of a sudden, and that sucks. That sucks the life out of everything when you're going to make sex a serious conversation. And so we got to a place where it was just a fun conversation that we're having in other places and not sitting in the bedroom like, but here's why, and here's what I'm thinking. And I think we got closer as a result. I know we got closer as a result of it. I know that I feel like I could talk to him about anything now, and I do. I feel like we have fun with that conversation, even when there's times that I'm like, don't rub my back, don't touch. So even the other night, he's like, hey, and he rubbed my back. I was like, don't with the back rub stuff. Like, just don't. I already know what that means. That doesn't mean that you want to give me a back rub. I already know. I was like, and just not tonight. Because I was just feeling like bloated and awful. And so it was like a laughing moment, not like a tense. I would never have said that before. I would have been like, okay. Or, you know, I don't know what I would have done, but it wouldn't have been make it fun. And I think that that's what the communication's about.
I love that. I want to talk about why having a dry spell has led to your best sex ever.
Yeah, of course.
But first I want to ask, what kind of sex do you have during a dry spell?
I always love like making out, kissing, and being touched. Like, I do love that. You know, with a dry spell like that, because sex is painful during this time, that there's not really any sex that you really want to have. You know, it really is just not. And so, I don't know. I think it's just more emotional. I think it's just more feeling, but it wasn't sex. Like, that's not what I want. I didn't want to be touched, you know, penetration or not. I didn't want to, I just didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to do anything with him, you know. I just didn't want to do anything. And I think there's a real pain when it comes to that, because you're dry, you know, your walls are dry, the lack of estrogen, the lack of all the things that are going on in your body, not to mention a lack of libido.
Mm-hmm. And what a gift to know that it is physical, and it is not an indicative of some type of
And that was scary. That was the scarier part. The scarier part wasn't not having sex. The scarier part was, why don't I want to?
And having a clear answer.
And having a clear answer is
everything.
Game changing. It's everything. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like there's something wrong with me or the relationship. Yeah.
When you started getting taking testosterone and you started to feel things turn around, do you have the conversation or do you just all of a sudden be like, rub my back?
Oh no, with him? I was just like, hey, here you go. Scratch your back. That's it. Yeah. No, it was, he doesn't need very much. He doesn't need convincing, you know? So no, it's great. It's great. And we have a good time. And it's funny because when I was trying to figure out with the book, like how much to really put in that sex chapter, because I was like, do I really want to go there? And then I thought, I'm going there with everything else, and that's the area that I'm not going to go there with. So I actually had a doctor like a proofread, you know, the book for just for medical clarity, and to just, we like went over it a million times, and she said, you know, I think we have to provide women even more in this chapter of sex. That was the only chapter that she like pulled out, and so then we went all the way in, and we're like, here's what you can do if, you know, if you're dry. Here's the conversation you can have. Here's some of the pills. Here's some of the things we don't have. Like, men have all these different pills for ED. We have like a few, like a handful of them. So we have pushed that conversation so that women feel comfortable having it whatever direction they want to go with it. And for women that are dating and maybe not in a relationship, they can also have that conversation, because there's women in perimenopause dating right now, or getting back out there on the dating scene in menopause.
I think that's so inspiring. And it's, again, helpful to have the script. And I can't even tell you how freeing it must have been for your husband to go through this period of time, because of the permission that you've given him on the other side for his body to change and that to be okay. Mm-hmm. And for you to be able to talk about it. I hear from so many people who are with a partner, maybe went on antidepressants or something happened in their health. Erections are not as common as they used to be. And then they distance themselves from any kind of physical intimacy altogether. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it. And then it just becomes contempt in the relationship.
A lot of contempt. And I've seen that before, and I don't necessarily know if it was sex or not sex in a relationship, but it was never anything I wanted to be a part of. I would see these couples across the table when I was younger, and they'd be like, reading the newspaper or like looking at their phone or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, that is not, I don't want to be lonely alone with someone. That was always my biggest fear. And so, and it was always something that I fought against to try to make sure that that didn't happen.
And you don't have to be lonely alone during a dry spell.
No, of course not. I don't think a dry spell, like, listen, if you care enough in that time to understand what it is, and whether you want to decide to figure it out and do something about it, or you just like, that's just not where you are right now, whichever direction you want to take with that. I think there's a lot that can come out of that. I really do. And that doesn't just happen in perimenopause or menopause. You know, to your point, it can happen at different parts in your life. And I think that that's okay. But I do think that open communication is really necessary. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, you really don't care.
And I love that I always, one of my least favorite relationship advice or idioms is like, relationships take great communication. Like, the key to a great relationship is great communication, which I liken to saying the key to great art is paint. Like, that's,
we know.
I'm going to require a bit more instruction, because communicating can also be, leave me alone, don't touch me.
Yep.
Communication can be like, God, like, get away, right? Yep. Or it could be shutting down and just, you know, verbally, non-verbally communicating and getting mad your partner's not picking up on those cues. So it's that, again, I can't even go back to how inspired I am by the story of experiencing it, noticing it, feeling like this is really different, and then having the strength in yourself and the strength in your partnership to talk about it right away, even on your honeymoon.
Thank you. You know what, though? I think that I was fearful, if I didn't, that I wouldn't know what was going on with me. If that makes sense. Like, I'd done enough research to, you know, kind of understand it. I didn't really understand the level that it would affect me. I really didn't. And I thought that I had been through all my symptoms, you know, but this was one that affected him too.
Mm-hmm. To land the plane and round things out, I want to hear about your great sex life now, because I loved that you gave that advice that, you know, during a dry spell, it's okay to not be having any sex if it's not comfortable for you. We're not trying to find a way to like work against your body or fight against the grain. But
I think that's when you become resentful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that, for me, that I would, yeah.
So tell me why a dry spell has led to the best sex of your life. Why do you thank your dry spell?
Yeah, well, I thank it because I walked him in after I'd started testosterone and like really kind of leveled out the hormone part of it. But I still needed I still wanted the turn on part of it too. You know, I still wanted it to be fun. I didn't want it to just be because, hey, I got on hormones and now everything seems to be working okay. So we went into a sex shop. We got lube. We got, you know, vibrators come to my house constantly. So that's like, I don't know. I'm always unboxing vibrators. So I didn't have any lack of those. But we were able to have fun with it. You know, we were able to have fun with experimentation, with not being afraid, with not being like, oh, do you need that to get turned on? Like, you know, I think that sometimes we have people that get very insulted because they feel like this is the way sex should be. We should kiss, fall into bed. It should be hot and steamy. This is what we do. This is what sex is. We have this visual. One of the doctors that I talk to often about testosterone, and she treats a lot of men with ED. She said, you know, Hollywood did us no favors by showing us this, like, this is how sex is supposed to be. And if you're not having sex like that, you're not having it. And Ira and I don't always have sex like that. Like, it's laughing, it's joking around. It's like an all day Sunday day. It's intimacy, being alone. It's not being embarrassed to want anything or try anything. And I think that that's what the dry spell taught me. Mm-hmm. And so it taught me who I am more than even taught him who I am.
Well, cheers to the beautiful journey of dry spells.
Thank you. Thank you. Cheers.
Well, what are you excited about right now? I know that you have another book coming out. Tell me all the details of what is getting you turned on for
what's
life.
What's getting me turned on? I'm turned on right now because I'm excited about having another World's Hottest Menopause Party. So we're in the works with that because I like to celebrate this time because I do think that there is some joy. So I'd love to officially invite you to it.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you.
Come talk sex with me.
I love that.
And, you know, we're working on another film, too. The M Factor documentary was really showed me a lot of in a lot of ways that we need to get this conversation into communities that aren't having it and give people access. And then I have a podcast, The Tamsin Show, that I would open invitation, love to have you on, too.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Where we like to have these conversations that are, you know, are real and meaningful and that showcase people's platforms, because that's the only way we're going to learn.
That's the only way we're going to learn, girl. Mm-hmm. Period. Speaking of learning,
right, okay,
you can get one more power.
Do you want to keep going?
Let's just
want to go real fast.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go.
I don't think we can do the full game. For those of you who want to know, I did beat Tamsin in chess. Yes, I am petty, and yes, I also want to rematch because I'd love to see you again. And if you want to see Tamsin again, go to her Instagram page, Tamsin Fidel. Grab a copy of her book, How to Menopause, wherever books are sold. Check out her world's biggest menopause party at tamsinfidel.com and listen to her podcast, The Tamsin Show. Now, while listening to this episode, you might have had some questions around your own sex drive. I know I did. So I rounded up three doctors to give us everything that we should know about our desire. So join me in welcoming OBGYN Dr. Mickey, lifestyle medical physician Dr. Lean, and pelvic floor expert Dr. Janelle Howell, aka the vagina rehab doctor. This is a highlight of our hour and 15 minute conversation. So if you want to listen to the full thing, go to loversbyshan.com/community. Let's get into the discussion. I want to start first and foremost by just answering the question, what even is libido?
To me, libido is this desire or appetite for sexual activity. And I would even go as farther to say a curiosity, because sometimes even for food, we're not extremely hungry, but as my husband says, I can eat. And sometimes I feel that with sex, just from the movies and media, we think that we'll have this ravenous desire for sex. But even just a curiosity or fantasizing, I think that's also a part of desire. So overall, I believe it is an appetite for sexual activity, even if it's a small appetite.
Really important in that definition is that it bothers you. If it doesn't bother you, then there is no pathology.
With that in mind, I love that we chatted about the biopsychosocial model. Or, for example, in Tamsin's case, she said she went to the doctor and her doctor said, see a sex therapist. So if you were the doctor that Tamsin went to see and she came in and said, guys, on my honeymoon, I just woke up and it was gone. Like, my appetite was completely gone. What would you say next? What would happen next in your office?
I think there's two different scenarios of who you can see. So you can either see your primary care physician, which would be internal medicine or family practice, like myself, internal medicine, or you might see your OB. So if you come to an internal medicine doctor, the single most important thing you can do to advocate for yourself and make sure that whatever chief complaint you had, it got checked thoroughly and you get a full workup, is at the time of calling your doctor's office to make that the reason for the visit. So what we often see is people would wait for their annual physical. You'll say, oh, it's just in a month. I'll just tell them then. And then it might be something that you might feel embarrassed about, and then you would leave it till the last 3 minutes of the visit. So I would say just to start with that, to guarantee the full attention and then the full workup. And then your primary doctor can start with a really good history. They can do some labs. They can do a physical examination. And then if you see your OB, we'll have Dr. Miki give some input on that.
The biopsychosocial model, like you mentioned, is so important. I'm really glad that that provider sent her to a sex therapist, because that is absolutely a piece of this puzzle. But we can't pretend that there's not clear biological aspects to low desire, arousal, and orgasm dysfunction. And so my job as the gynecologist is to do a very thorough history, looking at the medical conditions, surgeries, pregnancy history, medications you're on that could be contributing, both from a neurotransmitter perspective, from an arousal perspective. I should do a full exam examining the external vulva to see if I see any issues that could be impeding a person's sensory ability to take that input to their brain of arousal. Do I see that their clitoris has a lot of scar tissue around it and that has decreased sensation? I should do a pelvic floor assessment at minimum to see if there is evidence of pelvic floor dysfunction or issues with the pudendal nerve that innervates the clitoris, the labia, the perineum. I can allow the expert to speak more on the pelvic floor piece of it, which is so crucial. But there's a ton of biology that is a part of these conditions that we as gynecologists really need to take ownership over again and put it together in this biopsychosocial model. And the website that is a patient-facing website for the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health is called PROSAYLA, PROSAYLA. And it has a lot of great information that's understandable at a patient's level on a lot of the disorders, not just with desire and arousal and orgasm, but also with pain conditions as well. In our society, we love to gender hormones. You know, testosterone is for men and estrogen is for women, which is pretty silly from a physiologic perspective, because a woman makes more testosterone in her life than she actually makes estrogen. It's just that men make on an order of 10 times more, so they get ownership over androgens, which just does women a disservice. So, you know, testosterone peaks in our 20s and slowly tapers off. It's not like a drop off. Your adrenal glands still make a little bit of testosterone as you go through menopause. But, you know, this is a more nuanced conversation because people have different genetic receptors to testosterone within their, you know, organs and in their vulva. So it's not so simple to say, measure someone's testosterone, supplement with testosterone, that's going to fix all your problems. It might be a piece of the puzzle. And I don't think research is there now for premenopausal women currently for robust research showing that it will just be a one and done fix like Viagra is for men for women's desire.
I think that low libido is extremely common. And I am also reluctant to give an exact number, but I've seen somewhere towards one in two women and those who identify with a vagina have low libido, which is billions of women. And, you know, from a pelvic floor standpoint, one in three people struggle with pelvic floor dysfunction. And if you have pelvic floor dysfunction, whether it's prolapse, incontinence, you leak even a little bit when you sneeze, cough, laugh, or have the urge to pee, have chronic constipation or sexual pain, your chances of having sexual dysfunction go up by 56%. So we know that there are billions of us and women living with low libido. And to me, it just deserves more of the limelight in research for sure. Also from an educational standpoint, going all the way back to medical school, what our doctors are learning in school about pleasure. Let's just be real. I don't think a lot of people take female pleasure seriously, whereas everyone knows about erectile dysfunction. Everyone can identify with what that means, but not a lot of people know about what vaginismus is. what vulvodynia is, these things that have such a huge impact on female pleasure and your desire for sex. So I think it's, I think half of women and those who identify with it probably have some level of low desire. I think even from a testosterone standpoint, as you were touching on, we have to talk about how birth control and contraceptives impact our natural ability to make sex hormones. So, you know, I see a lot of women who are coming to me for sexual pain or like burning anywhere along the vaginal opening, the clitoris is hurting. And then I ask them, you know, are you on birth control? And they're like, yes, I've been on the pill for 15 years. And then we also discover that like the clitoris is shrinking, like it's smaller than it needs to be. The vulva is thinning. So, you know, the testosterone, the estrogen just don't have the capacity to bind with these tissues in the way that it naturally would if we were ovulating without interruption. And I'm not saying everyone negatively is impacted by birth control. That is a lie. And I don't get down with that. But some women are struggling, partly due to the way their body negatively reacts to birth control. They don't have enough testosterone to get horny. Like, you need testosterone. And it is so important. So I think just screening and asking more about, you know, what does your vulva look like down there? You know, can you even find the labia? I mean, there's issues where the inner labia is like fusing with the outer labia. Generally, that can be due to low sex hormones. And it's not just birth control. There's postpartum. There's obviously menopause and all of these different issues where we need to be asking women about their hormones and testing them for it so that we can support the libido from a chemical level, so that it's even possible to get in the mood.
First of all, I want to acknowledge how very important your work is, because not everyone has a medical problem leading to low libido. It can be really simple, quick fixes, like the stuff that you teach. And that's how I came to be familiar with you, is that I saw you on Masterclass and I loved your Masterclass. We went through it. Very important stuff that you teach. So, and I think that everyone in your community is already helping themselves by doing their end of that work. From my perspective as a lifestyle medicine doctor, I think of any health issue or any sort of wellness in life in terms of six pillars. So there are six pillars of health. So we start with our nutrition, our physical activity, sleep, very important, and then stress, avoiding stress, avoiding risky substances, and then emotional connection. And then when we look at our nutrition, our sexual hormones are actually made out of cholesterol. So you need to get your healthy cholesterol in. We're talking about your avocados, we're talking about nuts, olive oil. If you like salmon, the healthy fish, that stuff will start by giving your body what it needs to start making the testosterone that you need.
I was going to ask about that because a lot of people are having to make the decision between sex and sleep.
Listen, choose sex. Because sometimes sex can help you sleep because of the endorphins that are released. And also because of, I'm biased towards people who are experiencing pain. So from a pelvic floor standpoint, if sex is hurting you and you are finally getting to a place and you're now experiencing that desire again, I like to tell my community to use that momentum. So when you feel a desire, you want to act on it. You know, if you're getting horny, you want to respond to it. Because that's going to start to rebuild that positive feedback loop of I get a desire, I feed myself, and I enjoy what that thing is. And usually sex doesn't last more than 30 minutes. So you can still go to sleep after. I mean, unless y'all are having a 2-hour sex session, it shouldn't negatively impact your ability to sleep, especially if there's an orgasm involved. You will probably sleep even better for the night. So that's my recommendation if it is consensual and an enjoyable sexual experience. Absolutely.
I love that response. And I love the discussion around momentum. And I think that oftentimes for me, momentum has definitely been paired with accepting that I'm at a different stage in my relationship, accepting that I'm at a different stage in my body, and then also having so much trust in my romantic partnership. And I say that to say, because what happens in long-term relationships is we naturally stop experiencing what I refer to as the wave, where it's like, it's not even a choice. Like, my clothes are melting off of me at this point. I am ripping your clothes off. When you get that wave of desire, just naturally, I always say this, when I first got together with my husband, the first year we had sex every single night. And that wasn't a to-do, that was a to have to. And then, you know, year two, you're like, okay, it's every other night. And then year three, you're like, and I just made the comment to him that I'm like, we've been having sex with just each other for 10 years now. And that's a long time. And so before, I used to be somebody who, I never liked angry sex. If we're having an argument, I'm not in it, because I need to make sure that we're okay before my body feels safe enough to enjoy pleasure with you. Now that I just know we're going to be fine, if we get into a fight, I'm like, yes, like I can take this momentum and then I can have this experience and I know we're going to work it out afterwards. Similarly with jealousy, like I enjoy those feelings because they provide the momentum that I can then lean into and get to the other side. I want to say that to say, because a lot of people, a lot of people's low libido is partner specific. And not necessarily because their partner is doing something wrong. It could just be, again, the length of time that they're with somebody.
It is so incredibly common. In fact, I would expect it in a relationship rather than, you know, feel like there's a way to avoid it. Like, it's very normal. That being said, this goes back to that idea of novelty. You know, that reward pathway in our brain is being triggered, right? When we first meet someone, that first date, or, you know, in the beginning of a marriage, like we are constantly feeding that reward pathway. And then over time, just like with anything else, that pathway is less stimulated and it needs something different to hit those receptors. And so that's why the concept of novelty is so important. That actually brings up a really good point and why I think it's super important, not just with my sexual health patients, but a woman like who's having her annual exam, that I have them hold a mirror on their thigh and follow along during the vulvar exam, because changes do happen throughout your lifetime that are going to also affect your desire. And that's where, you know, interventions like, yes, pelvic floor physical therapy come in, but also, you know, maybe you need to have, you know, some scar tissue removed from your clitoris to free up some of those nerve endings. Maybe you would benefit from two of the FDA approved medications for premenopausal women that exist, you know, to increase the dopamine or norepinephrine in your brain to help with, you know, just that little extra neurotransmitter deficit that maybe you're experiencing, or to combat maybe the antidepressant that you're on that's increasing serotonin that can cause satiety and, you know, lower desire. Maybe some of the tissues within your vulva or your vagina are showing evidence of, you know, low estrogen and low testosterone, and you would benefit from some topical treatments with hormones to both increase blood flow, improve arousal, enhance sensation, things of that nature. Because if you are not perfusing your genital organs with blood, which we know is hormone dependent, not only will you have decreased arousal, you may also have pain. And that starts introducing a whole cycle of dysfunction with your pelvic floor and your pudendal nerve down there and those tissues. And eventually that, you know, pain can cause a psychological dislike of any interaction with your vulvar area. So you start, you know, subconsciously avoiding touching it, avoiding having sex. So helping women see their own anatomy, identifying problems before they become, you know, seriously pathologic, can really do a lot in prevention of sexual dysfunction later on in life and keeping your libido, you know, maintained.
Dr. Janelle, Dr. Mickey, Dr. Anita, thank you. This was so mind-blowing. Thank you for the help, the assistance, the guidance that you gave. And if you wouldn't mind, can you stay a little bit longer in the Lovers community for us to go a little bit deeper? And plus, a lot of people have individual questions they would love to run by you. Yes? Okay, amazing. For everybody else, we're going to sign off right now because we want to go a little bit more intimate, a bit more deep. If you're interested in being a part of intimate conversations like this, joining other classes, having one-on-one sessions with me, and so much more, go over to loversbyshan.com/community. And for everyone else, we'll see you next week on the podcast. Bye. For men who are experiencing sexual dysfunction, for example, or even low libido, they can just go to 7-Eleven, grab that pill, and have a night. Is there any equivalent for people with vulvas who are going on their honeymoon and they just want to be really horny on their honeymoon, not as a long-term fix, but as a sort of a special treat and pick-me-up? Is there anything that is on the market that you would suggest, or anything natural that you can do that will give you that wave?
We encourage partnered integration. One is just inviting them to come to the sessions or the doctor appointment or whatever healthcare appointment you're having. invite your partner to come because you're not having sex with yourself. Generally, you can, but most of the time, if you're having sexual issues that's impacting the relationship, it's not solo sex that we're talking about.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.